We don't need to know exactly what happens in our unconscious. Something is clearly going on there, just as it is that keeps us breathing all night. But when I speak about a GPS, what I mean is that just as we can use a map to guide us where we're going, we have that map in ourselves all the time, operating 24/7. The map doesn't tell us where we want to go, where we need to go, but it gives us guidance on how to get there. And that's what dreams can do if we pay attention to them.
So for your own personal practice, how do you pay attention to those dreams? Do you have a dream journal? A lot of people write down their dreams as soon as they wake up.
I keep track whenever the spirit moves me the next morning. I write in my journal. I do journaling generally anyway. But I don't necessarily write down every night's dreams. And some dreams seem to be more important than others. But in some cases, we don't know their meaning often until many weeks or even years later. So dreams are mysterious phenomena.
So how should we pay attention to them then? I mean, is it something that's just giving us an indication of how we're trying to process something we're going through? Or can they be used as a way to guide behavior then in our woken state?
They can be a way to guide us, because there's a Hasidic saying that a dream uninterpreted is like a letter unopened. So the first step is to open your mail. It may be that much of the mail that you get every day is something you want to discard. You don't even pay attention to it. But every now and then, there's something very important. Maybe the IRS is sending you a message or whatever it might be. So yes, you need to pay attention, but not every dream is equally important. I'll give one example, since I'm going to be talking this Friday about dreams and the stages of the soul. I wrote a book some 20 years ago called Five Stages of the Soul. They're call, search, struggle, breakthrough, and return. But interestingly enough, those five stages appear in the dreams that Charles Dickens gives us in that wonderful novel, A Christmas Carol, where Ebenezer Scrooge goes through a whole series of events in that night that prove to be absolutely decisive for him. So that's kind of an image that we could all pay attention to. Now, we don't all have dreams that are life-changing and quite that way, but sometimes we do, and we ought to pay attention.
I know this event that you're going to be talking at on Friday, the Interface series, you're going to be talking about how dreams could be used by professionals like psychotherapists or even people who are involved in pastoral care.
Yes.
To help support people in a major life transition. Talk a little bit about that.
Right. Well, the first thing is that psychotherapists and pastoral counselors and other people need to take dreams seriously. They don't always take dreams seriously. And they need to approach it from maybe a different standpoint than we normally do. I once did a dream workshop with an older woman who called herself Dream Mama. And she wrote a book called The Dream Belongs to the Dreamer. And that's a very good phrase to use, so that whether you're whatever kind of outside person you are, a therapist, a professor, a dream worker like me, you need to be recognizing always that it's the dreamer who provides the relevant interpretation, not some other person. So I'm very reluctant to, quote, interpret, unquote, people's dreams. They have to find the meaning for themselves if it's going to be powerful.
Do you think everybody dreams? Because not everybody remembers their dreams.
Oh, yes. Everyone. There's no question that every mammal dreams, and not just mammals, but all warm-blooded creatures, including birds. No evidence that cold-blooded creatures, reptiles, amphibians, do dream. We can measure this neurophysiologically at night. And, of course, we don't need to go into the details of sleep science, but a great deal has been learned in the last 50 years about the process of dreaming at night. So yes, we all do dream. Exactly why we dream remains a subject of debate, investigation, and science. But clearly something is going on there, not just for us as mammals, but also for other warm-blooded creatures, including birds.
And is there much neuroscience or much research actually happening into dreams?
A great deal. Some of the best is going on at Harvard University, for example, but really at universities all over the world. I happen to be a member of the International Association for the Study of Dreams, and you can go to conferences, read the journals, and get the latest. Now, the science of dreaming is one thing. The interpretation is something something else. And we don't need to talk in detail about, you know, rapid eye movement or neurophysiology or any of that. Just recognize that something important is going on there. We wouldn't be spending so much of our nighttime energy, metabolism, in dream work unless it had some value or meaning or purpose for our organism. What it is a subject of scientific inquiry. But each person, without knowing anything about the science or anything like that, can be their own best interpreter. And I want to caution people against thinking that they can buy a book in a bookstore about a dream dictionary. These have been popular for 2,000 years, since Greco-Roman times. And people are looking for some sort of a simple solution, like an equation, A means B or whatever. It doesn't work that way. And what's important is that the person experience their own insight into the meaning of the dream for them. And that requires a little attention of a different kind.
Well, how might people then start to do that? If somebody's listening right now,
right,
that they are aware of their dreams, or even if they know that they're dreaming, but
yes,
they tend to forget it. Right,
yes.
They
well, the first thing is, if you want to pay some serious attention to dreams, write it down, have a little book, When the Spirit Moves You. You can also read some good books, and there are many out there about dreams, avoiding the idea of the dream dictionary, but there are lots of examples of people's dreams. For people who are interested in this subject, they can send me a message. I'll be glad to send them my own bibliography of, you know, a one-page thing. You can contact me at hrmoody@yahoo.com, hrmoody@yahoo.com. I'm happy to. I'm not going to interpret your dreams, listeners, but I'll be glad to send you a one-page bibliography where you can find good guidance.
Are all dreams equal? I mean, there are some dreams that are scary. We call them nightmares.
Yes, nightmares.
And is that in a completely different category?
No, no. Nightmares wouldn't be there unless they had some meaning and purpose. They involve facing up to our fears at times. And one of my favorite examples, one of my good friends had a dream in which he had a recurrent dream. And if people have recurrent dreams, obviously they should pay a lot of attention to those. It's like if you get the same message day after day, somebody's trying to get through to you. But in his dream, it was a monster, kind of a bear-like, that was chasing him constantly. And it was only when eventually he, in the dream, turned around to face up to the bear, and eventually the bear started to shrink and disappear. And after that night, he had no more bad dreams. So that's a kind of metaphor, allegory for us. We need to face up to some of the demons within us. And we all have those demons, and we all need to face up to them.
Well, I know that you also host a monthly positive aging lunch group.
Yes.
And around that theme, you're also working on a new book, Dreams for the Second Half of Life.
Yes.
So are the dreams that we have when we're older different to maybe the dreams that young kids are having?
Sure. Just as the dreams of a soldier are going to be different from the dreams of a new mother or an older person. I'm 73 years old, so my dreams are a little bit different than my have been and when I was 40 years old or 17. So clearly our situation in life and our age will be a factor in our dreams. But it's important to remember that everybody is individual in this respect. So we could generalize about dreams of aging and say, well, it has to do with health or limited time. All true. But what we try to do in our positive aging lunch group is we're not a dream workshop. We're not a dream group. We just meet at the Sherpa restaurant every month or so, and we often have outside speakers, and we talk about the positive aspects of aging. We all hear all too often about the negative ones, you know, money or loneliness or health issues. These are all valid and important. I used to work for AARP in Washington, so I'm very sensitive to these things. But we need to pay more attention to the positive side and how we can grow as human beings. And that's what I focus on.
Well, it's going to be a fascinating discussion. It happens on Friday as part of the Interface Boulder series. And you can find out more at interfaceboulder.org. And Harry, Rick Moody is going to be speaking there on Friday, Dreams and Stages of the Soul. And when might we expect to see your new book, Dreams for the Second Half of Life?
Well, there's a draft of the book, quite complete, on my website, hrmoody.com. And anybody can read it, download it. I'm happy to correspond with anybody. I've already given my email address. I'm out there. I'm here in Boulder. I love to meet new people.
Well, Rick Moody, thank you very much.
Thank you for being here.